This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolinians are still waiting to learn the fate of the 9th Congressional District. A disputed election has left residents there without congressional representation. In the meantime, two big announcements added more uncertainty to the state's political landscape. Supreme Court Chief Justice Mark Martin announced that he will step down at the end of the month, this after 20 years on the court. Martin was appointed Chief Justice by Governor Pat McCrory in 2014. His replacement will be named by Governor Roy Cooper. Also, Republican Congressman Walter Jones has been in hospice for more than a week. He's been in poor health for months and took a turn for the worse after breaking his hip last month. WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff Tiberi has been following these stories. Jeff, welcome.
Hey, Frank.
Let's talk about Congressman Walter Jones first. Any word on the state of his health?
There is nothing new to report other than what we learned back on January 26th, and that was following several months of sickness and then a broken hip, which we heard about in mid-January. His health had deteriorated, and he entered hospice care. His family asked for privacy during this time, and we have not heard anything additionally from the family or his office to this point.
He was reelected in November, but has been unable to attend the swearing-in ceremony, has missed some votes. Who's representing District 3 in the meantime, or how does that work?
Well, it's a good question. I think similar to the 9th Congressional District, which we'll talk about in a moment, congressmen and women do obviously not serve by themselves. They have staffs. They have folks that are dedicated to policy issues and advisors and folks that are dealing with constituent issues and emails and phone calls, so on and so forth. So to some extent, I think that there has been business as usual to some extent in the 3rd Congressional District, with which Jones has served since 1995. And also remember that there are two U.S. senators from the state. So in the example of the 9th Congressional District, which also does not have representation officially on the floor of the U.S. House, so to speak, at the moment, Tom Tillis, the Republican U.S. senator from North Carolina, has been fairly active, I would say, on social media and just reminding people that he's there if there are constituent questions and if there's anything that he can do from that representative standpoint. But to some degree, there is an absence. The folks, the constituents in the 3rd and the 9th are lacking representation at this point.
An absence in this moment as Walter Jones continues his stay in hospice. He is a unique representative and unique in the annals of politics, certainly these days, but throughout his tenure, he has been and is today a unique form of politician, is he not?
That's for sure. I once asked a political science professor, hey, just size up Walter Jones for me. And he paused for a second. He scratched his chin, this political science professor, and he says, Walter Jones is Walter Jones. He's sort of an anomaly. He's an interesting guy. He is the son of a congressman. His dad, Walter Sr., served 13 terms in the U.S. House. Walter Jr. was a member of the North Carolina House for 5 terms, and he, from there, he's never shown a hesitance to buck leadership and buck what the party might be telling him to do. A good example of that, what happened here in Raleigh. And he's long been a libertarian, a populist, a social conservative, but was a breed of politician that really doesn't exist anymore. And that was a moderate Democrat. When he was here in the statehouse 30 years ago, last month, he was part of a group of 18 Democrats, which broke with the majority, gathered with then the Republican minority, and there was a coup, and they overthrew the Speaker of the North Carolina State House. That was, a long time ago. He ran in 1992 for his father's seat. He lost in a primary runoff. This was coming out of the 1990 census and 1991 redistricting, and it was a seat that had been cultivated to try to garner more representation from minority voters. It was really aimed at having an African-American congressperson, and it did achieve that. So Jones lost in 1992 as a Democrat in a primary runoff. He came back 2 years later in 1994 and is part of that wave that saw Newt Gingrich become Speaker of the House. He was swept into office as a Republican, and he has remained there for 13 terms, covering it's actually one of the biggest congressional districts in the country. It's really a huge swath of land. It's about 8,000 square miles. It stretches from Greenville up to the northeast, really corner of the state, and down to Camp Lejeune. So military is also a very important part of his legacy.
Well, as we say, Walter Jones is in hospice care right now. Should he not be able to serve out his term, can he be replaced? Is there a special election? What would happen in that event?
So in the event of vacancies in the U.S. House, a special election is triggered. That's different than a vacancy in the U.S. Senate, when a governor would appoint someone to fill the vacancy until an election can be held. But if there is a vacancy in this third congressional district, there would be a special election. And it is unlikely that that would be settled just in terms of, you know, a filing period, a primary, potentially a primary runoff, and then a general election. It would be unlikely that, that's going to happen, that there would be anyone new in that seat before September, perhaps October. And then, of course, whoever that politician, that person would be running again a year later in the November 2020 election, because U.S. House seats come up every 2 years.
Well, let's talk about another vacancy that is current or will be very, very soon in North Carolina. North Carolina's Supreme Court Chief Justice Mark Martin announced that he is stepping down at the end of February. He wants to become the dean of Regent University Law School in Virginia Beach, one of now only two Republican justices on the court. Talk about what happens now and what his leaving means to the court in North Carolina, the high court.
It's a 5-2 split here, seven justices on the state Supreme Court as opposed to nine at the federal level. And we have seen this shift in recent years. It is now, it's a 5-3 court, a 5-2 court. The Chief Justice, he's been on the court, I believe, as you mentioned in the introduction, for 20 years. He was 35 years old when he had a seat on the bench, and he's been the Chief Justice for almost 5 years now. He's in the minority on the bench, but he's really a mainstay on the court, and he would age out at 72, meaning you have to retire at that age. But he could be on for a much longer period of time. So his departure signals the end of somebody who's been on the bench for a very long time on the state Supreme Court. It also signals that the court could very well shift a little bit further to the left. The governor will appoint the replacement. He'll do two things, because Martin is the Chief Justice. He'll replace the Chief Justice, and he can do that with anybody. It could be a member of the court, one of the remaining six justices, or it could be a lawyer from outside of the court. It could be a jurist from the Supreme Court or the appellate court. It's really a wide-ranging latitude for the governor, but he will do that. Depending on, he's not bound to party, right, is the other important note here. It doesn't have to be a Republican, and that could move the court to a 6-1 Democratic to Republican split. Depending on how this plays out, whether it's somebody from the bench who he elevates, or whether it's if the person he appoints, he also names them the Chief Justice, we're either going to have two or three openings on the Supreme Court come 2020. And one of the remaining Republicans, I suppose there could be two remaining Republicans, but Justice Paul Newby is the other Republican currently on the court. He's up in 2020. This all is to say that there could be, it's possible, depending on what happens in 2020 with the election, you could have seven Democrats on the court come 2020.
We are talking about politics in the state of North Carolina today on The State of Things. Jeff DeBerry is with us. Yeah, it's an interesting issue, because historically, governors have appointed the replacement of as a member of the same party. But you were just about to talk about Justice Newby. That could be a wrinkle. And of course, the tradition, some of the political niceties that have been enjoyed between the parties started to end in 2010. And so it's interesting to see where some of the rules had changed. The unspoken rules very much changed in 2010. Interesting to see what Governor Cooper might do now. Why would he not elevate Newby?
He doesn't have to. Yep. And I think that some of these norms have left, and they've gone out. I mean, sure, he could do it, and if he says, you know what, I've been limited in my powers as a Democratic governor by the Republican-led legislature, and if he wants to angle for the best situation for he and other Democrats and folks who we anticipate are going to continue to challenge laws that are implemented by the Republican-led General Assembly, he might not do that. We really don't know. I talked to him this morning, and he gave a generally vague answer about, trying to find the best person who's going to uphold the laws and abide by the North Carolina Constitution. But he did not tip his cap as to whether or not he's strongly considering any Republicans or moderates moderates or independents for this vacancy.
All right. Well, let's move on. We've got a minute left, but I want to talk about a new panel to look at what's happening in the absentee ballot fraud allegations in the 9th Congressional District. What's the latest?
Listeners will remember that, of course, this is a contested race down in the 9th Congressional, which stretches from Charlotte over to Fayetteville. There's been a bit of a limbo because we didn't have a state board of elections for a while. We do have a state board of elections again. It was appointed by the governor. There are 3 Democrats and 2 Republicans on this board. There's going to be an evidentiary hearing on February 18th and 19th to look at irregularities with mail-in balloting. And at the end of that, what's expected to be a 2-day evidentiary hearing, they're either going to vote to certify, which would require 3 votes, or call for a new election, which would require 4 of the 5 members of the state board to approve a new election, which means it would require buy-in from at least 1 Republican. So hopefully a significant step, and we'll know more come February 19th.
Jeff Tiberi, Capital Bureau Chief for WUNC. Thank you so much, Jeff.
You're welcome, Frank.
We've got links to his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we learn about a forgotten U.S. Navy program that explored the bottom of the sea. We'll talk about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.